Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. The walkaway movement has certainly gathered much momentum in recent months. And when I say walkaway, I'm talking, of course, about the walkaways from the Democratic Party and their radical Marxist agenda. People are figuring it out, like my guest today. And once you see the tools and techniques of this deep conditioning, you can't unsee it. That is how this awakening works. It has a momentum all its own. And you well may be next, my friend. And the walkaway reasons are varied, although you'll hear variations of the same themes. Maybe you're a parent and you're starting to notice all the strange things happening in public school. The indoctrination against America, tradition, and family. Or the insane sexual content that public schools are exposing our young children to. What 6 or 7-year-old needs to hear all about drag queens and gender reassignment? Good God, let them be kids for a few years. Enough with all the grooming. Or maybe you're noticing, like Lisa and I did, that your child's intellectual development was or is stagnating. One reason for this might be that they're not reading books anymore in public schools. Did you know that? That's right. No more reading or writing book reports. Why is that? Indoctrination and ideology have taken the place of reading, writing, and arithmetic. Or perhaps curiosity got the best of you and you started to listen to Jordan Peterson videos to see what all the hubbub was about. Maybe Dr. Peterson opened your eyes to something, as he has done for countless other liberals and former liberals. Or maybe you even wandered over to Telegram to see what all those crazy MAGA people are talking about and found yourself agreeing with or at least understanding a few too many of them. It's been known to happen. I believe that when it starts to dawn on we the people that we have a common enemy and we have identified that enemy, the infighting will more or less stop. We have been choking on the lies and deception, haven't we? But I can see us coming out of the fog of war and into the light. And what a long, strange trip it has been. My guest today is Gracie West. Gracie is an author, a parent, a former feminist, and another member of the growing walkaway tribe. Here is my interview with Gracie West. Okay, I'm here with Gracie West, writer, thought leader. I like to think of you as a thought leader. Author Gracie West. Gracie, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Tony. It's so good to be here.
Yeah, you know, I came across your name from Kelly Lamb. Her and I did an episode. I'm looking to do a sort of series of episodes. My listeners know I tend to do them in chunks. So if I do a topic, they'll be able to find 4, 5, 6 episodes on that. And Kelly and this episode is all part of a series of people who have left the left. And I know you've done some work on YouTube and writing about this. And so this episode's really in that vein of people that were longtime liberals, myself included. You used to live in Portland. I live in Seattle. My listeners know I was a liberal for 30 years, a proud liberal. And then things really started to shift for me kind of in 2016. You know, I was part of the initial uproar when Trump got elected. I was also, you know, making a big fuss and, oh my God, everything's going to hell. And then I pivoted quite quickly. I started to go, wait a minute. I'm feeling like I'm being played on this. Like what is going on? Like they're not even giving this guy even a half a chance to get going. And then the narrative, all the weird stuff that was going on with the radical left, and that, you know, it just set me looking for more freedom of expression, more where I could just kind of question things. You know, it was just kind of this, I started to become aware that this was this unquestioning conformity to the dominant narrative. And I just was like, you know, I'm not doing that. And, you know, I'd like to hear your story about that. Like you know, were you a liberal up until a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years, like, What was the awakening for you? Because you went to college, and most people get done with college, they're liberals. I mean, it's not an accident. And then what was the awakening for you? Was it one thing? Was it a series of things? Was it did your values change, or did you feel like the left changed the game to omit you? What was your sort of journey in your own awakening in that?
Well, I was a liberal for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everything you said could have been said by me, except for you said 30 years and I said 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you know, I was part of the uproar when Trump was elected. I was very, mm-hmm. very upset about it and said some awful things on my social media about people who followed him or, you know, about him. And mm-hmm. looking back, I realized I knew nothing about him. I didn't even vote for Hillary. And it's because she was so connected with corporations. I was such a good liberal. I didn't mm-hmm. even vote for her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, people, I guess, if you weren't that committed of a liberal, you would automatically have voted for Hillary. But if you're a solid liberal who boycotted Walmart for a decade and yep. you found out that she sat on the board of directors for years benefiting, you're like, wait, what?
Right.
So, you know, I ended up not voting for her for that reason. I don't feel like my values had changed when I finally had my own awakening. And honestly, Trump's election had something to do with that. Mm-hmm. As you know, I used to live in Portland, Oregon, and it was a crazy place after Trump was elected. People just went nuts.
Yep.
And I mean, I was not happy about it. I was like, why is this D-list celebrity who's a businessman becoming a politician? But later I realized, wait, we kind of want business people doing the president's job, not politicians. Mm-hmm. But at the time I was very like, wait, why is he doing this?
Right.
But then all the media and the news was saying, you know, all these bad things. And so, you know, he was morally corrupt, et cetera. So, you know, I felt the same way you did with how you were not allowed to question. And that was the first eye-opening moment when you do say something that's contrary to the narrative, the magic words that you're supposed to repeat. When you say something contrary to it, you get such backlash so quickly that it's shocking. And you want to say, look, I'm as good a liberal as you, but I mean, don't you see this kind of thing happening? I was told, overlook Hillary, vote for her just simply to not let Trump in. And I had principles and I said, you know, that's not how I work. So I voted for the third party, whoever that was, I forget even, but anyway, what I would say is Trump was the very first eye-opening moment, because when you question anything, you get all of this flack and feedback and it's shocking. You think, what is this knee-jerk reaction happening? And it makes you question even more. So at that same time, not only did Portland go nuts, they were throwing televisions off from highway bridges onto the I-5.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be associated with that. That's dangerous. That's deadly. That's awful. I don't want to be associated with these nut jobs. But then at the same time, up in your neck of the woods at Evergreen University was Brett Weinstein. Weinstein, I think you call him.
Yep.
So he was a professor. If people don't know, I recommend looking him up. I had learned about this professor who was a liberal, a evolutionary biologist, who simply questioned this idea of telling one race that you're not allowed to come on campus for a day. So he thought that was not a good idea, given the fact that he's a Jew. And he's like, you know, I don't know. It just kind of brings a little question mark for him.
Yeah.
And so he questioned it, but he got run out of campus by a violent mob. He mm-hmm. kind of ran for his life. The university students took the president hostage, essentially. They were out of control. And all of these YouTube videos that were being uploaded were so shocking to me, because I thought, I see how we got here, because I sat in these classes 20 years ago, but now I'm watching it all play out. And it was shocking and I didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But that was number two. Number three was I had also, because of probably those videos, YouTube recommended, hey, do you want to see this other bigot who university students hate? His name is Jordan Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really this first video that the far left uploaded, because they thought it would be, you know, this tell on this bigot kind of video, but it transformed my life. And it was him being questioned by a mob up in his university in Canada, mob of blue-haired Taliban, I like to call them.
Yep.
they were yelling him down and asking him questions like, how can you do this? And how can you believe that? And he was trying to answer them. And at some point they were interrupting him a lot. And at some point he said, well, do you want to know the answer? And they said, no. And right. I thought, well, that was one of my moments of going, okay, people who are not interested in the truth, I also don't want to associate with them.
Right.
So if you're asking somebody a question because you think they're Hitler, you might want to pay attention to their answer, but they didn't care what the answer was. They had already assigned guilt. And so pulled back a little more and started listening to, I thought, well, is this Hitler? Probably. I mean, look at, he's causing all this controversy. So I went and looked him up and I found all of his videos. And this is right when before he got really big, I started watching all of his university videos of his lectures. And of course he's a psychologist. And so he's discussing all kinds of things and mythology and psychology and you name it. And it was fascinating and it had nothing to do with being a bigot. And man, he just blew my mind because he started to tell me things that I had never heard. I had never heard that socialism and communism had killed hundreds of millions of people in the last century. And that was shocking to me because I had been told in university that these are the morally righteous political and economic systems.
Yep.
And when I was listening to him describe these horrific realities, I thought, you know, it is just wrong that nobody told me this. They didn't give me a chance to decide for myself whether these are morally righteous. Mm-hmm. Nobody offered me that option. So kind of made me mad.
Yeah.
And I pulled back pretty fast. I because as I started to verbalize some of these things to my leftist friends, I got the packaged answers that I would have given someone else. Mm-hmm. But not just that, I got fear and knee-jerk reactions and shutdown and rejection and excommunication. And it was just this snowball of, whoa, not just walking away, but being shoved out.
Yeah. I think if most, I mean, Dr. Peterson has red-pilled a lot of people. I think if, like, I still know a lot of liberals, and I think many of them, not all of them, but many of them, if they listened to Dr. Peterson and just sat down on a weekend and, you know, set aside a couple hours to click on some of his lectures on topics that maybe jump out at them, mm-hmm. I really think they would have a similar reaction, a similar kind of like, I thought this guy was supposed to be, you know, the devil. I thought this guy was supposed to be the enemy of us, you know, a racist, a terrorist kind of thing, all the things they call him. And I think he's just so smart and lays it out in such a really nice way. And he's vulnerable. He's not this kind of like, he's not just, you know, like scolding people. He's really, he brings you into his discussions in a way where, you know, it's stimulating. And I just so appreciate who he is. And I just feel like a lot of people have, you know, have found some freedom that they didn't have prior to listening to him. I'm just super, super grateful. You know, you had mentioned to me that you had studied religion in grad school, and you mentioned that the leftist ideology that we're talking about is much like a secular religion.
Yes.
How do you mean that exactly?
Well, I could go into all kinds of things about that, but I want to say one more thing about Peterson for the record. I would attribute him to single-handedly bringing me out of feminism and turning me from a feminist to an anti-feminist.
Mm.
And it's not because he's anti-feminist. It's because he opened my eyes to this ideology that had been I had been indoctrinated into in college, and I recognized it at some point, and I rejected it because I realized nobody gave me an option. Nobody gave me the choice to decide what I thought about everything because they didn't give me all the truth or all the answers, or some of it straight out lies.
Yeah.
What
shifted for you in terms of being a feminist after listening to Dr. Peterson? Like, what were your views? What are your views now that you didn't have prior to listening to those, right? Especially in the vein of being a feminist.
Sure. Well, in university, of course, they start off with changing all the definitions of words so that you, it's kind of like being in a cult where it's like, you wouldn't normally sign up for these thoughts, but once they kind of rearrange your brain, then what they say makes sense. And so like they had redefined all these words, racism, sexism, all the things. And then by the time they said, so given these new definitions, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, I guess I could see it now. And by the time you're out, you're just a committed feminist. But, and you'd always heard, oh, poor women. Oh, look at women. And they give you these stats that frankly are unfair because they're, well, they don't tell you how they get them. For example, the wage gap, they don't tell you how they come around to that. They just tell you the number, you know, 70 cents on the dollar or something. And then you repeat it, you parrot it back, the magic words. But he goes, he would have conversations with people like Camelia Paglia. I can't remember how to say her name. She was talking about the wage gap and going into detail of how they got to that number. And I go, okay, then therefore it's not true, or it is very questionable whether it would be true. And then I realized, okay, if I'm not given the choice on something, it makes me pull way back and say, I don't know what I think, right? But specifically, one thing he did for me was give me this other perspective, like, look how men are treated. And it's like, oh, well, I can't argue that. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's okay to degrade men verbally in public. And it's just socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And for a person like me who wanted equality, mm-hmm. and I see this double standard, I'm like, you know, I'm actually a person who wants equality. I don't want to be better than or superior to men.
Yep.
So he really transformed how I was able to look at the world, because I finally just was able to take off these lenses that they literally called them lenses in feminist studies. Here's some lenses, look through the world like this. And I did. And he basically kind of took those glasses off and said, hey, take a look at these stats. I was like, right. Wow.
Well, I went to university, sided with the feminists on the abortion issue, because I was mm-hmm. like, well, they're really passionate and I respect women and this is super important to them. So I'm going to be a pro-choice on this issue. Mm-hmm. I never examined it. I never really got down to maybe how I felt about it. I just said, look, it seems like that's a women's issue. I want strong women. I want them empowered. And they're all really passionate about this. So I've got a side over here. Mm-hmm. And now looking back, I'm like, God, I really didn't examine that issue at all. And what a terrible form of birth control that is. Yeah. Like, I'm like, there's a lot of ways to not get pregnant. Like they weren't talking about that. Like, mm-mm. And I've just gotten stronger in my values. And I'm much more pro-life. And I mean that pro-life in a really broad sense, but specifically mm-hmm. on that issue as well. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and so that was another one where I was like, okay, wait a minute. I'd never really examine that from my value system, and my value system is getting stronger and clearer. So I can look at that and speak about it respectfully. And I'm a libertarian, meaning I really believe I believe maximum freedom for the individual. Mm-hmm. And you know, and so, yeah, anyways, I just wanted to put that in mm-hmm. there because I've shifted on that mm-hmm. issue. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Regarding the religious nature of the far left ideology, I guess I should tell you where I began my spiritual and then academic journey, because mm-hmm. I was raised as a conservative Christian in the evangelical strain, I guess, mm-hmm. and went to college where they told me why I should feel really ashamed for that, mm-hmm. and why those people are wrong, and not just wrong, but like morally wrong.
Yep.
So, you know, look at this awful stuff that they've done. Look at this awful stuff that they believe. Look at this awful stuff they say. Don't you feel ashamed of yourself? Mm-hmm. And so I was open. I mean, I'm paying for an education, so I'm open to learning. And of course they redefined a lot of things for me.
Sure.
And I was a fool enough to believe what they're saying. And anyway, I kind of came around to thinking, yeah, you're right, you know, these ignorant, backward people. And I didn't lose my faith in Christianity, mm-hmm. in Christ. I didn't lose my faith in that. But it changed me. I didn't pray anymore. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to church for 10 years. I had adopted a new moral code.
Yep.
And that's why one reason why I do recognize this as having a religious nature to it, because it's, you know, they start off by taking away your moral foundation so that they can give you a new moral code.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's interesting. I did go to graduate school. So my bachelor's degree was in women's studies, feminist studies. Yep. I learned for 4 years all the reasons why I should be a feminist.
Yep.
And I lived that way for 20 years, like I said, believing that it was the just moral way. And I went to graduate school. I did my master's degree in the sociology of religion.
Mm-hmm.
I studied evangelical feminists. It was interesting to me that there was this whole group of women in evangelicalism that, well, they don't call themselves that, so that would be unfair. But as a sociologist who really didn't care, I called them that. They call themselves egalitarian. So anyway, I was still really involved in this literature about feminism, sociology. But coming out of that and looking back, I see that the religious nature, having studied religion, and I would say I see it in a few things. One, every religion has a moment of conversion, and I can talk about each of these, but it also has purity rules where you can contaminate yourself in certain ways. And there's moral codes, how you should behave. And then it's missional, sometimes, especially evangelical faith is missional.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a strong sense of outsider, insider boundaries, like who's in and who's out.
Right.
There's also, of course, the apocalypse story, the end of days.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I could talk about each of those and how I see those played out in the far left, if you're interested.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we could go into that. What do you notice? What does the end of days thing for the left? What does that entail exactly?
Well, a few years ago, AOC said it best. We have 12 years before the world ends.
I didn't know she said that.
Oh yeah. Right. It's the climate change. It's everything is about to end. And so, you know, submit to our ideology because you're in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that. That's their end of days narrative, where they keep pushing it back, of course, like a good cult would.
Mm-hmm.
But so you've got your conversion, where you acknowledge you confess your sins, of your original sin of being white or male or a homophobe.
This and or the carbon footprint, right? Now, I guess that would be part of your sins now, would be whatever carbon footprint you're leaving. Yeah. So
you acknowledge that publicly and you confess it and you apologize to the indigenous people or black people or you name it. You're verbalizing it and you commit yourself to this new way. You're going to be an ally to the oppressed. And the difference between this religion and Christianity is that there is no forgiveness for sin. You're just white or you're male or et cetera. No forgiveness. There's only reparations and penance.
Yep.
There's purity rules where you can contaminate yourself easily. So you've got, my husband's friend calls it the blue-haired Taliban, right? The Taliban, they're tearing down statues and burning books, banning books. And really, there's this ability for you to be contaminated by guilty by association, or you know, in a Christian realm, they might say you need to avoid the appearance of evil. So maybe don't go hang out at the bar. Mm-hmm. But this is, they do it differently. You don't hang out with conservatives. They can contaminate you by proximity,
mm-hmm.
That type of thing. Reparations relieves your guilt from sin. So there's that purity. You can purify a little bit yourself by that. I think it's fascinating.
You and I both have children. How many kids do you have?
Two.
You have two, yeah. And they're about the same age. One of the things that I noticed, I pulled my son out of public school because of what was going on. Like They were changing the rules and saying, we don't want parents can no longer come on campus. And then I went down and read the school board, the riot act. And I'm sure, you know, in the minutes of the meeting, I'm referred to probably as a terrorist or something, right? There's some sort of name calling.
Yeah.
Here's this crazy parent trying to insert. And I was just seeing so many insane things. Like, I noticed that my son academically wasn't improving, and they weren't reading books, and they weren't writing. And Common Core was this weird dumbing down math where I was looking at it. And I'm like, engineers don't use this to build buildings and bridges. They're teaching you something that is not solid. And then the ideology, like the critical race theory, where if you're if you're born with white skin, you're the devil. You're everything that's wrong with the world because you're white. And then all of the stuff, all the grooming, these weird sexual education where that stuff. I'm like, I know even normie, like left-wing parents are going to start. This is so obvious. I don't even need to do episodes about it. But you know what? Right. I have done episodes because I talk to parents and sometimes like, really? Oh, you know, shouldn't we? I'm like, they're teaching. They're talking about gender reassignment with 6 and 7 year olds. Are you okay with that? That is so weird. And that people are arguing that we're in a time where it seems so obvious that, like somebody was saying, oh, men can get pregnant. I'm like, there has never been a biological male in the history of the planet that got pregnant. We don't have we don't have uteruses. So just because you know, Mary changed her gender and now she's Harry and she gets pregnant doesn't mean biological men can get pregnant. It means that you know, and it's like they act like, oh, how dare you say something so transphobic. It's like we're kind of just talking common sense. Like there's never been a biological boy that grew up and then gave birth to a baby. That just does not happen in any reality that anybody will ever see. But the left is arguing like we're the dumb ones for pointing it out. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. This is comical. Mm-hmm. If it would be so comical if kids weren't being damaged by their ideology, like you're having kids taking hormone blockers and they're mutilating themselves and they're signing up for gender reassignment and then regretting it later going, oh my God, I got played by this weird ideology.
Yeah. By this creepy teacher or school helper. Yeah. Yeah. It's satanic. If you want to use the strongest word, you know what, there it is. It's the strongest word I can find. Mm-hmm. Because you know, when children, vulnerable, innocent children are becoming the target, that's where you draw the line. When you have kids, you're like, and my mama bear came out and here it is.
Oh yeah. Big time.
So Papa Bear. So I get it. And one thing is fascinating. As a side note, you mentioned, you know, biology. Mm-hmm. There's this, and I want to come back to the school stuff because we have a story about my kids' public school thing, but yeah, there's this very, well, to use the high priests of academia's language, cognitive dissonance. Okay. There's a lot of disruption between your thought and your action or your belief system and your, well, what you say and what you believe. There's a lot of disconnect. And so, like, for example, they'll say let's use an example of evolution or the vaccine. They'll say, follow the science or science. We believe in science. But when it comes to the trans issue, they don't believe in science.
Right.
It's like, well, you really don't believe in science if you're going to say that biological men can get pregnant. So,
right. Yeah. Correct. Yep.
But anyway, there's a lot of separation between thought and behavior and words and beliefs. And oh my goodness, I feel like I became whole again when I left this place, this weird mental gymnastics they have you doing.
Yeah. So what happened at the school that you wanted to share with us?
Yeah. So at the school, we like I said, we were living in Portland, Oregon. Our kids 2 years ago were going to Portland public school system places for their education. And like you said, it was very dumbed down. I mean, my daughter would come home from school in fourth and fifth grade and say, you know, I've been getting the same like worksheet for math for like 2 years and it's just really boring. And I feel like, you know, she could have gone way faster. And it was this one worksheet and they never had homework. And it was just, here's a paper, do it every day. And it just didn't progress. And she was even mentioning it. She was, you know, she didn't know anything about education. And here is my 9-year-old mentioning this.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. I'm not a homeschooler. I never wanted to be. It's like the thing I never wanted to do. And exactly. So at the same time, I'm watching stuff and we go to, we get an email from the school and it says, we've changed our code of conduct. And we, in 2 days, we're having a meeting with the community about it. And then we're just going to implement it. And so I thought, 2 days, goodness, we have to get our work schedule arranged and do all this. And so we showed up and we were like one of 2 or 3 parents in the entire school district that didn't get reached out to very specifically. So there was a large Spanish speaking population that had arrived and they had a translator. So they had done some outreach to Spanish speaking parents, which is fine. That's great.
Yep.
But I had literally just gotten an email 2 days ago and it was like this side note of, hey, we met, by the way, we changed the code of conduct. And so I thought, oh, well, I'm kind of curious. So I emailed the district person and I said, can we have a copy of the old one, please? Because we have this PDF thing. You can run a PDF through 2 different PDFs through to see the changes that have been made in a document.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just curious, you know, boil it down. What are the changes? The entire thing was a whole new document. And it had eliminated, so we had to read through it with a fine tooth comb and it was a few pages of detailed language and charts and you name it. And so we're doing this in a 2-day period of working and trying to feed family and do all the things. And I'm looking through it and I realize they took out the civil rights stuff of, we will not discriminate based on XYZ.
Mm.
They took it out.
Hmm.
I was like, first of all, that's just the law. And why did you take it out? And then I read through, and I know the language of equity because I studied this ideology, and I know the theorists that came up with this crap.
Yep.
So I've read their books, so I get it. When they say equity, what they mean is revenge. And so most people see equity and they think equality, and it's actually the opposite of equality. That's why they changed the word.
Yeah.
And so I look into it and what they say, we will basically discipline. So this is about conduct, this document. We will basically hand out discipline for the same crime based on what they call disaggregated data, disaggregated data.
Mm.
And what that means is by their social categories, gender, so, you know, all this stuff.
Yep.
The stuff that they that the civil rights protects you
right.
from.
They're going to try to change that. Yeah. Yeah.
So they said it differently. They said, we're going to implement equity and we're going to distribute resources in an equitable way based on disaggregated data. Mm-hmm. And so we showed up to the meeting and we said, look, we're educated people. My husband has a PhD in sociology. I have an MA. We get this language. We understand that what you mean is you are going to differentiate how you're going to distribute resources that school has and also distribute your discipline based on, you know, infractions for the same exact crime based on these categories that are arbitrary. We understand what you're saying here.
Yes.
And they nodded. They nodded and said, yeah. And I said, we are not going to sign this document. You have to sign this document to put your children in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is not just against our conscience, but it is actually illegal. Mm-hmm. And we will not be signing this. And if our children undergo any kind of, you know, disciplinary or differential treatment because of us not signing this, then we will have our lawyer contact you, you know?
They really count on most parents are too busy to look through this stuff, right?
They sign it.
Yeah. Cause they're like, look, I got to do this. And they're not thinking they're doing any funny business, but good for you for like looking through and saying, wait a minute, they're drastically changing this. What in the hell is going on? And that coupled probably with your daughter saying, they're not teaching me anything in math. They keep handing me the same worksheet for 2 years. Right.
Yeah.
My own father worked in near Portland in Oregon City in the school district there for decades. And he is appalled at what's going on. He is like, I cannot believe what I'm seeing and reading about what's happening in public education. He's like, what in the hell is going on? What are these unions, what are they throwing down at everybody? And, you know, they got the teachers caught because there's probably a lot of teachers that understand kind of what's going on a little bit, but maybe they're like, I don't want to lose my job, or, you know, I've got five more years and I can retire on my pension. I don't want to cause any distractions, or I don't want, you know, there's just all this stuff, but young teachers are leaving the profession. I think young teachers are like, I don't want to do this. This is getting too weird, you know?
And some of them are just ignorant, and they actually think that these equity things are actually equality, because they get trained that, you know, all these teachers go to the same training and they get brainwashed into this ideology, just like I did. And it's like, look, you know, equity is this new thing, and here's what we need to do. And it's basically, it's our turn now, and it's okay if some people suffer. And that they kind of, they say it in all this great, wonderful language, disaggregated data, you know, and it sounds morally great, and people fall for it. And some people actually, like I said to one of these principals that was at this district meeting, I said, do you recognize that this is going to have you guys implement discipline different based on people's race, for example, and et cetera. And she goes, and she nodded and goes, but we won't really do that in practice. I said, this document commands you to do that.
Right.
It demands that you do that. And this is okay with you.
Like, right. Well, they do a little, it's a funny, you're hitting it right on the nose, isn't that they do, when they indoctrinate, in universities, whether you're going to be a teacher, there are lots of other fields as well. Like, they do this funny word spell, because most people, when they hear equity, you're like, oh, equity sounds pretty good. That sounds, you know, my mind goes fair. You know, we're all getting a fair shake and all this stuff. But then that's just the cover word spell. Underneath it is all the things that you've been speaking about, which is like, we're going to call it this, but in actual, we're going to make this to be massively divisive, massively racist,
unequal.
Yeah. It's just, it's,
and, but the trick of it is that it sounds like the word equality.
Yeah.
Yes. Equity.
Yeah.
You just take out out two letters and all of the meaning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is a bit missional, just like they go in and they teach the teachers. They went in and teach the district. An equity officer came and taught the district why they're failing to produce equal data. Like 50% of, you know, this race is not being treated. Well, you know how it's like the majority of people who are being disciplined are this race and or something else. And it needs to be 50-50, and your data looks bad. So let's just make it equal. It's really, that's the solution? You're just going to force the outcome and not look at the,
look at the metrics they're using for education. It's not even, can the kids think straight? Can they do math? Can they, you know, they're not using any of the metrics. Mm-mm. It's like, are we properly educating? It's like, they're using metrics like that. Mm-hmm. Are the people that get called into the principal's office, is there an even split amongst all of, it's like, are you kidding me? You guys are so far off. It's ridiculous.
Go ahead. Well, I mean, speaking of education, so when we moved out of Portland 2 years ago, I stumbled, and I would say it was God, but it just stumbled into having my kids being homeschooled. And I say stumbled because I would never have considered it, never have thought of it, never, ever. Mm-hmm. But I met this woman within 24 hours of moving here, accidentally in Walmart. She says, I'm starting up this. Somehow we start talking in the school aisle. I'm in the school aisle. I don't know where I'm sending my kids at all. I'm just buying stuff. And she starts talking to me and she's like, yeah, well, I have this homeschool co-op happening. I'm doing it at my house because COVID shut it down. And so we're just going to do it at my house. And she's talking about it. And she goes, yeah, we already picked all the curriculum. It's this classical education, Catholic. And
beautiful.
I was like, wow, that's good. If I had put my kids in public school, they would have been sitting at home alone on their individual computers doing school alone because it was 2020.
Yeah.
And I realized this is ideal because they can not only see kids 2 days of the week instead of zero, but there's this classical curriculum that I kind of have an interest in here. And then I'm going to be overseeing their work anyway. It's basically like homeschooling. I might as well just do that. So, you know, this co-op, different moms will teach different subjects depending on their expertise, or they hire a tutor from a college that knows more. And then twice a week, all these homeschooled kids come together and they do classes. Mm-hmm. So I signed up my kids for this. After the first year, my at the time 13-year-old son says to me, "I've learned more this past year than I have in my entire schooling in public school."
Yep.
And yep. I was like, "I really hope that's not true." He's like, "It is, Mom." And guess what? He's now 14. He's doing chemistry and algebra too.
Yeah. No, you did the right thing. You know, what's funny about that is I think there's a lot of parents that are looking at the public schools and going, "Oh my God, this is just looks terrible." But like what you had said, they don't want to homeschool. Like, "I don't have the schedule. I can't do that. Maybe I can afford private school, maybe not, but what are my homeschool?" Mm-hmm. I think there's more and more options being created because of the dynamic that you and I are talking about. Mm-hmm. And I remember my listeners, I think I mentioned on one of their episodes, he's now deceased. The New York City Teacher of the Year was a man by the name of John Taylor Gatto. And he was a beloved teacher. The kids adored him because he was so unconventional. Mm-hmm. And he wrote some really, really popular books about true educating young people. And mm-hmm. I remember reading, and he said, he's like, "The homeschool kids are always so much smarter than the ones that go to school." True. That's what he said. He goes, because they haven't been brainwashed. They don't have all that useless stuff that they mm-hmm. cram down their throat.
Oh my gosh.
And now it's all ideology. They're not even covering math and writing.
Oh
and
my
reading.
Gosh. So now it's math is racist.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, so,
yeah, exactly.
Literally they say that.
Yeah,
is totally, racist. So totally. Is time, because the white man came up with time, which right. is such a lie. It's crazy. It's like, do you even know anything about history at all? Well, why would you say that the white people came up with time? I mean, we're talking ancient world here, whatever.
I know.
But,
it's absurd.
You know, yeah. So, but what my son also said when we first started, when I said, "You're going to take an ancient history class with this other tutor," they call them tutors instead of teachers because they're only with them twice a week. But I said, "You're going to do this ancient history class." And my son said, "Oh, this is the first year being homeschooled." He goes, "I hate history." I said, "Why?" He goes, "It's all about white people killing Native Americans." And I'm like, "Whoa, okay. There is a lot more history." And I go, "Are you serious?" He goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay, well, let's just give it a chance." He has learned everything there is to know about Aristotle and the ancient debates and the mythology of the Greek times and the Roman Empire and you name it. And he is loving it.
That's how you
it's
do
like,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty phenomenal to see how much they did not know. They did not know the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
They didn't know how to say it.
I know. They don't do now, it. Yeah. My son goes to a school where they do the Pledge of Allegiance every morning. And I'm like, mm-hmm. thank you. Thank God. There's still places mm-hmm. where you could go and learn. Yeah. Yeah. I feel super fortunate, and I feel concerned for mm-hmm. parents that feel like they are forced to send their kids to public school right now. I what would bring a smile to my face is to see a massive exodus out of mm-hmm. that indoctrination program, mm-hmm. that dark Marxist, you know, satan, you know, you can call it whatever you want. It ain't good mm-hmm. for kids mm-hmm. the way and their self-esteem and their intellect and their spirit. And I would love to see an exodus out. I'd love to see all kinds of new schools that honor the country and God and the flag and a classical education where they really get to be good at reading and math and all the things that are foundational for being a highly functioning adult.
I think it's also intentional to disorient children when you don't teach them the foundation of Western civilization, because West is bad, of course. But when you don't teach somebody the foundation of their civilization, what you are doing is you're disorienting them.
Yeah.
You are confusing them about why our culture has valued certain things over time. It doesn't mean we should continue to value those things, but when you don't mm-hmm. teach how you got to where you are, how are you supposed to know where you're going?
Exactly. I agree.
I do think it's intentional. And this is a communist move. Marxism, socialism kind of leads into this totalitarian communist regime. But I'm telling you, it's communists have always taken the children away, the education of children away from parents, because they want to indoctrinate them. And I think I see that move very clearly here in the public system.
It reminds me of Malcolm X, who said, "Never let your enemies educate your children." and I think that's a statement that packs a punch, because mm-hmm. we're seeing that now. It's like, if they're coming out unable to think straight, don't know their history, don't know the value of their culture, of you know, where we've been, and they're just obedient. That's a perfect mm-hmm. recipe for communism and for
oh, yeah.
you know, socialism moving towards communism. You get people that can't think straight, can't function. They got to depend on the state. Guess what? The state's part of the whole thing. And here we're going to, you know, we're going to provide you this as long as you do what we want.
Yes. And, our benevolent overlords are, yeah, you know, they're kind until they have you by the balls.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. So you wrote a novel. Congratulations, by the way. Was that a long time ago? Was that?
It was, I published it in 2020.
Okay. Not that long ago. Yeah. What's the title? And then what's it about? You hinted that it had some appreciation of men in the mm-hmm. in the book, and I was like, oh, how sweet, you know, you don't hear mm-hmm. that much anymore. So how did you come to write the book? What's the title? Where can people find it?
Sure. It's called Breathing in Water by mm-hmm. Gracie West.
Yep.
And it is on Amazon. It's a fiction novel, and it's a story about a feminist. It is not my story. I have a different story, but it is a story about a feminist who changes their mind on certain key things over time because their life becomes tragic and they have no other choice. But mm-hmm. a lot of what she changes her mind about has to do with the role of men in her life, but also in society. Mm-hmm. It takes a while. You know, you have to be, if you're reading it, you have to be willing to get in the head of a feminist for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of this feminist realizing that she's liberal and her friends are getting to be far left and maybe she doesn't want to go there, but then she's got these compelling reasons to start listening to some of her conservative friends. And ultimately, I like to say by the end of the book, without giving anything away, I'd like to say it's what Jordan Peterson says is a rescuing your father, because there's a valuation of men and fatherhood by the end of it, by a woman who at the beginning didn't have that. So,
yeah.
You know, you have to be able to tolerate listening to a feminist's thought and word at the beginning. But mm-hmm. it's a fiction novel.
Beautiful. Well, congratulations. You know, I appreciate, it's funny, you know, as a man, men are funny. Like, we don't need to be constantly patted on the back. That's not our jam, you know, but mm-hmm. to be acknowledged periodically, I think it goes a long ways. I think for men, we're right now getting beaten down. I'm a middle-aged, mm-hmm. I'm a middle-aged straight white man, a father, like I'm the enemy of mm-hmm. you know, 12 different camps out there. You know what I mean? Like yeah. I, you know, whatever comes out of mm-hmm. my mouth must be dangerous, you know? And so mm-hmm. I appreciate when, especially I'd say when a former feminist says, mm-hmm. You know, this is what I see the value of fathers mm-hmm. and the father of men, because, you know, yep. I think it's unspoken amongst the tribe of men. I know I've led men's workshops and men's groups for a long time. And we kind of look around in our circles and just kind of nod at each other. Like, I know what you're bringing, you warrior. I see you standing. Yeah. In the strength of your beliefs, and you would take a bullet for your family, and you guys are just badasses. And thank God you're here, because I draw strength from men and mm-hmm. from, and I find women to be amazingly courageous and strong and smart and beautiful. And so I think it's a mutual appreciation.
Yeah.
I just appreciate you saying that the book's book has an appreciation of men, because that brought a smile to my face.
Oh, good. Well, I have to say that I have changed my tune. When you should hear me talk to my kids, because they're let's see, 13 and a 14-year-old going on 15. Mm-hmm. So my girl's 13 and my boy is 14. And we're driving down the street and I see all this construction and these men out there in the freeze or the heat and doing dangerous jobs. And I point it out and I say, aren't they incredible? Look at men. Yeah. I said, look at what men do. And I see skyscrapers. I'm like, check that out. Men built that. Isn't that fascinating and incredible how men think and how their brains work and what they've done in civilization? And like I pointed out, these are men's creations. Like,
that's awesome.
That's phenomenal. And I tell my son, you have every reason to be proud as a male. Absolutely. Men have built civilization. They have not done it without female support.
Yep.
But they have done it nonetheless. And some of the stuff is mind blowing, but we see it every day. You see a man putting his life on the line for society, whether they're a police officer or a construction worker, mm-hmm. and they do phenomenal stuff. And I think it's amazing. I point it out to my kids every day.
That's beautiful. Thank you for doing that on behalf of my tribe and my gender. Mm-hmm. I so appreciate that acknowledgement. Well, Gracie, thanks so much for coming on Basecamp for Men. I so appreciate you sharing your journey. I think it's super fascinating. I hope it's helpful for those that are maybe feeling a little jettisoned, maybe parents that are going, oh, I'm starting to notice the same kinds of things, or this is the fourth time I've heard this conversation, and now she's having success homeschooling. So I hope there's resources in the episode. I know there will be. Oh, and you've got a YouTube channel. It's called Embarrass, mm-hmm. Embarrassing Mom. Is that right? I love that title. Yeah.
You know, what's funny is, yes, I do have it. I don't update it really much anymore, but it has a whole host of videos of my transition from being this leftist. My very first video was me saying, I think I'm not going to be a liberal anymore. Maybe. Mm. Well, I said, I'm leaving the Democratic Party. I might not even be a liberal anymore. So you see how far I've come.
Yeah.
But that was my first video, and it got a lot of traction because of the walk away movement. But yeah. the way that my channel was named is my son wanted to put a video online of his mom dancing around the house. So he created my YouTube channel and called it Embarrassing Mom and posted a video of me dancing. And I thought, you know, I'm going to put a video out there about me not wanting to vote for the Democrats. So I did that. And I got 150,000 views, and I was like, oh my goodness, shut down the dancing video, you know?
Yeah. We're rebranding Embarrassing Mom is now. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of the story. It's just my story, kind of my talking head experience. You get to see all my deep thoughts of life, and it's really fascinating, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't update it very much anymore.
Well, that's fine. I'm sure there's plenty of valuable content. Well, thank you, Gracie, so much. I really appreciate your time and working through the tech issues we had earlier, and mm-hmm. just come back anytime. And thanks for sharing your insight and your wisdom. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Tony, and blessings to you and all of your followers.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. To find Gracie's excellent book, Breathing in Water, simply go to Amazon. You'll find it there. And if you're interested in John Taylor Gatto's books, he was the legendary New York City Teacher of the Year and thought leader. I found a couple of his on Amazon as well. You can find Dumbing Us Down, The Hidden Curriculum of Compulsory Schooling, and Weapons of Mass Instruction, both on Amazon. Thank you, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.